everybody. This is Brett. Welcome back to the podcast. Today is the 16th of May, and what you're going to hear is the after show, the bonus show, we'll call it, from last Thursday night. Mandrick Osborne and I stayed on Ustream for about another 45 minutes, and we continued to take phone calls. From this point forward, after this show, these types of things will be in the bonus content section of the new website once we launch it. But because we had kind of a cliffhanger with Mickey on the phone, I figured I would go ahead and put this one out as part of the regular podcasts. We covered a variety of topics. We talked about Wikipedia at the end of the show a little bit. We talked about medication. We talked about nonviolent communication. And because we weren't broadcasting on LRN, it got a little loose. In fact, I wanted to wait until I had another show almost ready to go before I put this out, because we have kind of an agreement. It's not very firm, but it's more something that Ian from LRN asked us to do, to try and prevent real explicit content from going out in our podcasts if our podcasts are playing in a rotation on LRN, because some radio stations might be picking it up and that could cause certain problems for some people. So it's not a big deal, but I can certainly post anything I want here as long as I have something right after it to replace it, because LRN only picks up the most recent episode of the show and puts it into a rotation. But instead, because the next show that I'm doing, I'm recording with Wes Bertrand tonight, we're doing the next step in the Logical Fallacy series, and that's what most of the non-live podcasts are going to move into at this point, with a few exceptions. We're going to be doing some other stuff too. That Logical Fallacy series is going to be more of kind of an ongoing overtime thing. And then in the end, I'll put all the episodes together on a webpage somewhere, so it can be useful to people who want to take the whole thing all at once. But I just figured I would edit out, bleep out, or cut out some of the stuff that was unnecessary or inappropriate, and put it out as soon as I can, because like I said, that show with Wes might not be ready for a couple of days. So that's it. If you want to hear more of this stuff in the future, please consider becoming a subscriber. We ask for $6 a month. You can go to schoolsucksproject.com and click on support if you want to learn how to do that. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy this, and take care. Mickey, are you there? Where is he?
Billy?
Sorry, I was on mute. Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Oh, great. All right, so this still works. All right, Mickey, I'm sorry. Where were we?
Honestly, I can't remember. Sorry.
We were talking about communicating with people and trying to...
Oh, right.
Open minds. Right?
Yes. Communicating with people and the differences between rational responses and emotional responses.
So I think that most of what we get is emotion. I mean, can any of us remember a time where we tried some of this stuff out and we got a reasoned response of somebody, you know, disagreeing with what we were saying, regardless of the issue?
Yes.
Okay.
Getting a reasonable response?
Like a reasonable response, and then carrying it through and having a productive conversation.
Yeah, there's sure.
Okay.
I understand that may not be as common, but it certainly has happened. I mean, I'm thinking of a couple of situations in my head right now. Just
how about you, Mickey? I mean, do you have any success in this area?
I have no. I really wish that I did, because I try very hard to present my position in not just as descriptive or reasonable or good a way as possible, but I also I teach people. I teach people about technology stuff. I try to use their words to describe what's going on, and I still don't achieve success. And it's discouraging. It's frustrating. And one of the things that draws me to things like School Sucks and other things like it is trying to find other people's mechanisms to talk to people. I yearn for it. I need it. I want other people to, even if they disagree with me, to at least talk about the reasons that they believe what they do instead of shutting down. So which is go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was gonna say, so you're looking for some understanding and comprehension from the person you're talking to for you and for them, right? I mean, for both sides.
I don't think that communication cannot happen unless you connect with someone.
Right.
And if you're talking about superficial issues, that's easy. Connecting with someone about whether it's sunny or rainy doesn't take a whole lot. But connecting with someone about things that touch first principles, now those are things that require a whole lot more connection. You have to be using language that goes a lot deeper than sunny and cloudy.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, there has to be a level of trust as well. I mean, if you're going to talk about, I mean, I guess it depends on what you're talking about specifically.
When you talk about level of trust, I think that's very important, especially in the climate that we live in, because a lot of us who are involved with this kind of thing tend to be political, or at least interested in politics, and the political climate is polar. If you are in Camp A, you disagree with everything in Camp B. So when you approach people, the first thing that they do is try to figure out whether you're in their camp or the other camp, so that they know whether to trust the words that you say or to distrust all the words that you say. And one of the things that I fight is sounding like I think I usually sound like a Republican just because I'm fiscally responsible or whatever, but I'm also a peacemonger, so I don't know. At any rate, I've had people say things back to me disagreeing with words I never spoke because they expected those to be the words that I said because they didn't trust me.
Yeah, I recently played this clip on my show of this guy interviewing this woman, Naomi Wolf. You guys familiar with Naomi Wolf?
Yeah.
Who wrote and he is he's Fox News, right? So he's trying to set up the conversation into something that he's prepared an argument against. So you can see this certainly in the mainstream media and in the binary political dialogue of left and right that we have in this country, that people immediately want to put you into a category that they know how to destroy. So, I mean, I've been called a young Republican and a Tea Partier and a liberal, you know, depending on what the issue is that I was talking about, because, they want to steer you into a place that they're comfortable arguing against. I think that's very common. Do you think that's what it could have been?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's important then probably to just sidestep that completely, because oftentimes you're having a conversation with somebody that you disagree with about something. I'm sure there's common ground that can be found somewhere, right? Like you just have to, it's listening to what they're saying, because if you want to be heard, you have to also listen as well. You know, if you want to make that kind of connection. So trying to figure out what it is. I mean, wouldn't you agree with that? I mean, it's just not waiting for your turn to talk, you know, like actually hearing what they're saying and recognizing what they need, you know, what they're seeking, and then trying to relate to them in some way. You know,
and yeah, also,
they have a need for that conversation, you know, that's trying to be met through that conversation. So what is it? Why do they want to engage you? Why do they want to bat away, you know, what you're talking about?
Well, not even that, but if they're talking about like, well, I love school. Schools are great because it teaches kids. So it's, you know, it's like important for them to see their children, you know, to see kids grow up and you know, learn things and have a, you know, not grow up stupid or whatever they may be thinking.
Or are they just telling themselves a story to kind of bat away the horrors that they know are being inflicted on their children through that schooling process, because they remember what it was like for them, you know, and they just, oh, well, you know, good enough. It was good enough for me. That's another one. It was good enough for me, right? Yeah. Why should we?
Good enough for me or better than the alternative.
Right. Why should we make progress from generation to generation when it was good enough for people in the 50s?
Yeah, it's the same thing. Like, oh, you know, my parents weren't that bad. You know, they didn't hit me as much as this other guy's parents did. So.
Sure, sure. So it sounds like it sounds like a lot of rationalization. But how do we wind up here from our from coast to coast conspiracy talk?
Because the conspiracy is What is the goal? That's where I was driving from. Conspiracy is popular because there's a lot of things that we can talk about with regard to conspiracy.
Sure.
And we can even be right, but it doesn't matter because being right about a conspiracy is not our goal. Our goal is to make things better.
I agree. I absolutely agree with that.
And that's how we got to communication.
Hey, Mickey, you know what I'm a fan of, and Brett's even talked about this before in the past.
Uh-huh.
As far as communication, I'm a big fan of nonviolent communication, specifically. I've read some of the literature on it, but I actually talk with a lot of friends about it on a weekly basis. We discuss. I don't know how familiar you are with that or not.
I've heard Stefan Molyneux talk about it, and someone else whose name escapes me at the moment.
Wes Bertram.
Yes, that's it. Thank you.
You're welcome. He's a friend of mine, and he's a friend of Brett's too, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You consider him a friend.
And sure. I found it. You know, I was really intrigued by it. I didn't find that it was particularly useful as a podcast producer, like somebody who's trying to make an entertaining podcast the way that I do,
right,
to transform my whole way of speaking into nonviolent communication. And when people first trying to learn it, they sound very awkward and off-putting. And I think it takes some time to really understand what it's all about and then learn how to speak it in a way that isn't extra, even more offensive to other people, because you're asking them about feelings and needs and they don't, that's not always diffusing a situation when someone is yelling at you and saying, well, let's,
it's on how you phrase it, though.
Exactly.
Obviously, yeah, not how you phrase.
I have to admit that I don't have a complete buy-in to nonviolent communication because I believe that your primary goal in talking to someone is to communicate something. And when you're talking about getting something done, you should be using words that have action. There are times when nonviolent communication is not going to be the most effective communication method. I think that it should be something that is in your toolbox. It is something that you should be able to bring out, it should not be the totality.
What about, I mean, if somebody who's real pro state and all these things, they're just talking to you about something. I mean, I've been in situations where I've empathized with police officers and, you know, directly with them, and I've related that to them. I gave them some empathy about the situation, and I could tell they appreciated that. I mean, isn't that how you start forming a basic connection with somebody where they will be able to listen to you and may consider your, you know, what you have to say?
That is, using nonviolent communication, which is basically, if I understand it correctly, and I'm not done any reading on it, it's just been the 15 minutes of listening to a couple of people talk about it. It is not using threatening language in a conversation. Does that sound right?
It's more than that, but I mean, it's a lot with your language, but it's also a lot with how you think and trying to understand when somebody's talking to you, trying to recognize what it is that they want.
And you know, another thing that I think is really important about it too is trying to understand what you want and what you need out of that conversation. So I think it's more of a behind the scenes understanding of what's going on in human interactions. Like when most people picture nonviolent communication, they have this kind of caricature of it, where you need a giraffe puppet, and like a messy kind of hippie hairdo, and I don't think that that's an accurate and full enough description of what it is. I think it's about whether you are very heavy on the lingo associated with nonviolent communication or not. And I think as you get better at it, you learn a way of doing it that's less obvious to the person you're communicating with, but it's about understanding what your needs for a certain interaction are and understanding what the other person's needs for that interaction are. But I think what's most important is that you understand your own needs. Like, why
Absolutely.
Do you want to do this?
Sure.
And I think that was something that I was personally very confused about for a long time. Like, why am I doing why do I want to engage some of these people if I know that it's just, ruining a social situation and I'm not going to get anywhere with them as far as changing their mind? Why am I doing it?
Yeah, I mean, you only have so much time in your life, right? I mean, you have to ask yourself, it's like, do I want to spend this time doing this?
Yeah. And I haven't had a conversation with a person like that in months. And I'm not missing anything, you know, from doing that. So
would I be wrong to call nonviolent communication empathizing with someone or sympathizing with someone. Having the ability to see where they're coming from in order to come from their point of view to talk about what you want.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be empathizing with them, trying to see what exactly it is that, you know, what need they're trying to get met, and then trying to make a request to see if they, you know, if they would listen to you or be willing to listen to you about your point, you know, where you're coming from as well. See if they'd be willing to empathize with you, I guess. And then, I could see that used in situations where. I mean, I keep saying like you could use it, but it's a way for me to change the way I think. Like when I talk to somebody who I may disagree with, rather than just being like, "Oh, this guy's such an a-hole," you know, just trying to understand where he's coming from goes a long way. That on the most basic level.
So, one of the whole reason that this is something important to me is I want to affect change.
Right.
I want to actually bring a message to people, make them think, make them understand why, not only why do I think the way I do, but why will this make their lives better? And that's what I continuously try to work on. That's why I now don't use some words or talk about some topics that I used to, because they don't, even though they make me feel better, that's not my goal. Or not my immediate goal.
Yeah, but you still want to feel better too, obviously, right? I mean,
but I have gotten all the satisfaction I can out of short-term goals like getting a great zinger in.
That is very right, satisfying. Yeah. As a zinger guy myself.
I think I got into it for the zingers. You know? I think, you know, like if you're like a liberal or a conservative, you can't zing anybody. All you can do is get zinged.
Yeah.
So like this is like all kinds of great opportunities, like zing, zing. Like you're a liberal, you're a conservative. I'll set it up and zing you both at the same time. You know, but yeah, you're right that is not. That was what I was talking about at the beginning of the show, how we call, you know, we say, oh, I subscribe to the libertarian philosophy, but then I act like a statist. I mean, that's just kind of like a bullying activity that I'm happy to not be participating in anymore. Now, I understand that it makes great entertainment, like on talk radio or on a podcast.
Right.
And, you know, people have written me emails saying, you're a dick, you're an a-. We're off LRN, so people can, if you...
Are you reading my email again?
Is that from you?
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that I wouldn't act that way in real life, like the first time I was having a conversation with somebody, unless I was, I would act that way if I was extremely comfortable with that person and they were showing me, you know, that same sort of attitude. But that's not where you start. I mean, you never start being aggressive, you know, verbally aggressive.
Yeah, when have you ever changed from somebody being like, oh, you suck and you need to do things this way? When were you ever like, oh, you're right, okay, I'm going to do that?
Yeah, yeah, and that was the other thing too. Like, one of my big mistakes for a long time was I felt like I could shame a person into agreeing with me. That's not going to happen because, you know, it's already emotional to begin with. All of these things, politics, religion, culture, schooling, parenting, these are all like extremely emotionally incendiary issues for people. And I think another part of it too is the intellectual apathy. Like people get a belief system. Maybe they got it from their parents. Maybe they got it from their school. Maybe they got it from some media personality that they like. But once they have it, you know, we don't grow up thinking that going out and seeking information is going to be like this fun, exciting thing. It's really usually associated with,
boring,
you know,
school.
Compulsion and boredom and this unchosen obligations.
Yeah. Well, Brett, you said you want to go out and shame people. That's initially how, you know.
Yeah.
How you? Where do you think that comes from? I mean, from growing up. I think back to when I was growing up as a kid. Just that's really, it was constantly being shamed into changing behavior.
Yeah. Jesus, why did it work on us?
Right. Of course, you're going to want to go out and do that. That's how exactly, you know, what we went through as kids.
Yeah.
Most of us, I'm sure. I know that's, I did. I grew up in.
Now, you had a very strict religious upbringing, Greek Orthodox.
Yeah.
I was Roman Catholic. Osborne?
Yeah, very fundy Christian kind
French
of thing.
Davidian.
Fundy Christian?
Yeah, yeah.
What's fundy?
Yeah, fundamentalist.
Fundamentalist.
Oh, fundamentalist.
Yeah.
I was thinking of Fungo. That's the bat that you use to hit fly balls to outfielders when they warm up. Mickey, how about you?
Roman Catholic. I was an altar boy.
Me too.
Yeah.
Greek Orthodox altar boys? We didn't have to worry about the priest touching us, though. The priests were allowed to be married.
If that happened to me, I buried that memory nice and deep.
That's so scary. Ugh.
No, I mean, you know, like,
repressed it. No, I got you.
Even being able to recall it.
I would never admit it. Especially if I liked it.
I don't think you could actually. I don't think there's any situation where a kid could like that. Just this huge power dynamic. You know what I mean? It's insane. Just I know you're joking.
Yeah, no, but yeah,
you defuse the situation.
Yeah,
but and that's all about guilting and shaming. You know, I think they laid
that
off.
Still happens. That happens to 30 and 40 and 50 year olds.
Right.
Like. I've had discussions about all kinds of things, like just take social programs, for example, like education. It's what a civilized society does. The language that is used to shame you into, oh, shoot, well, I'm not civilized if I don't believe in Medicare and public education.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You hate old people.
Yeah,
I do.
And
I do. I hate them.
I'm not really crazy about old people.
Really?
Is that okay?
I flirted with two older ladies.
They annoy
the
living piss out of me.
I flirted with two older ladies at the grocery store the other day. It was so cute.
I'm just saying, like, you know, I just did this this interview with Kevin Soling on my podcast, and he was the guy who did the movie War on Kids. And, you know, he was talking about the hypocrisy of the baby boomer generation, how these were the people who were involved in, you know, the anti-war protests during Vietnam, who were marching for civil rights. And just within a couple of decades became the most, you know, entitled, authoritarian, statist generation that this country has seen probably since, you know, the times of the plantation. You know, so how does that happen? How did they plug themselves so back into the system after seeing in so many ways what it actually was?
Well, they were just looking to use the system, though, right?
Well, yeah.
I mean, obviously, the things they were seeking. A lot of it made sense, like, you know, obviously, like civil rights and such. But they were trying to use the force of government,
use the system to change the system.
Right.
I think to a certain extent, yeah, they thought the system could be something else. Maybe they think that they made it. Maybe they think that because the Vietnam War eventually ended, and there was the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Maybe they think that they made the government into the good thing. Right. So give us Medicare, give us Social Security, fight wars against terror, fight wars against drugs, fight wars against nouns, whatever nouns, fight wars against kids, perpetuate this horrid education system.
Yeah.
But Mickey, if we can change topics here a little bit, I got to tell you, I don't know about these other guys,
Can I change topic real quick?
Yeah, sure.
So Mickey, when Brett's like, hey, I want you on the show, I was like, okay. I was like, what do you want me to do? Because I'm kind of tame right now. And he's like, well, just be you, but less. That's an exact Brett quote. You said change subjects, so there you go.
That's what I wanted to do, because now we're just in this after show mentality. And Mickey, thanks so much for calling in. And I think you generated some of the best discussion in the last couple hours by far. But I want to apologize to anyone who's still listening, because I don't feel like I'm on my A game as far as conversation is concerned, because there's a lot of things going on in front of me, and I think it's hard to keep track of all of this. How about you guys? You feel like you're on your A game?
It was an ambitious plan, sir.
It was
an ambitious plan.
You're going to get used to that.
This is like my B-minus game.
You think so?
Oh, yeah, actually, yeah.
This is like, it feels like my D game.
My A game, if you search Mandrake Liberty Forum, that's my A game. That's all. Just Google search Mandrake, M-A-N-D-R-K, Liberty Forum.
That was your best.
That was my A game
performance.
And there's it is all.
Yeah, but I want to apologize to anyone who had only ever heard the podcast, and you kind of hear me tripping and stumbling my way through this tonight.
He does a lot of editing on the podcast, and tonight was proof.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean,
well,
people should see.
A podcast is not the same as a live show.
No,
I mean,
it's not. Awards. You're right. And I've done live stuff before. I mean, we've done live stuff before, but not. There's a lot of things that I have to control here. So, but
I thought it was a great show, and I'm glad you did it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, dude, I think so too. And it takes time to get used to, and you know, you're heading it up, and you'll get used to it, and if things will go smoother, and every show will get better.
Yeah.
Until it gets to that point where they just kind of just drop off and you really should just quit and move on.
Yeah. Start something new.
Right.
That's why I'm doing this.
Right.
Because I got to that point with the podcast.
Yeah. Like in late 2009.
Yeah. It's actually not true at all. It's
best show in the world.
I agree. Or that's what we're shooting for. Best show in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Best podcast in the world.
I wish Osborne would shut the hell up.
Yeah. You're very quiet tonight, Osborne. Yeah.
Jitterbox over here.
So, Mickey, it was great to hear from you. I actually know Mickey. I've met him before. He's from New Jersey. And, Mickey, you're going to Porkfest, right?
I am indeed.
Sweet,
I'm bringing my family with me.
That's awesome.
Stop by the main pavilion, visit the George's Famous Baklava stand. I'll be there cooking food. And that's the only way you're going to see me.
I'll be the tall, skinny redhead.
Okay. I completely forget who you are. No, I'm just.
Do we have name tags at Porkfest or just?
I don't wear name tags. I got a hat and an apron on, and sometimes a dress.
You'll be wearing your name tag.
I don't wear a name tag.
Yeah, you do.
I don't need a name tag.
You do now.
Who else wears a black baker's hat?
Yeah, that's true.
With a George's Famous Baklava apron on,
just you,
right?
Probably.
It's just me.
So, Mickey, we're gonna wrap up, but again, it was great to talk to you. Thank you
so much, Mickey,
for calling in and for staying on hold and waiting for us to come back. And I hope we'll definitely hear from you again.
He sounds like a cool dude.
He's great.
He's
fantastic.
Like, really nice conversation. And he has,
no, I love you guys.
I didn't say I love you. I'm not there yet, dude. But you have these like dramatic pauses while you're talking, and it's like perfect. I'm like, ooh. And you kind of almost sound like the American Stefan, almost with the if you want a little bit more with the accent, it would sound almost like Stefan.
Now I've heard about Mickey from people who know him that he would be a very effective politician because of his communication skills.
I don't like
skills.
You anymore. No, I'm sorry.
But, no, for good.
Carry that ring, sir.
All right, Mickey, thanks so much. I'll see you in June if I don't hear from you before then.
Woo-hoo! Hey, great job. I'll talk to you later.
All right, bye.
Yeah. So
why do we have call Skype sounds again?
I don't, because you
maybe that was his.
No, that was you. That was hang up sound.
My hang up sound.
It was your hang up sound.
Yeah. All right, well, it doesn't matter because we're not on.
Oh, yeah, we are.
Ian Freeman's not going to hear that.
Ian Freeman's listening right now and he's saying,
"No, he's not.
I hate those sons of bitches. I'm driving to Manch right now."
How many people are in the chat?
Let's see here. We still have 16 current users.
Oh, wow.
And there's like 9 people in chat.
Yeah.
All of them fell asleep at this point.
Maybe someone wants to call in.
Yeah. We'll take one more call. I got to get home because I got to have kind of an early morning. But next person who Skypes in.
Zomguy is still up.
We'll talk to you for a few minutes. Then we're going to wrap this up.
You know, you had a lot of people listening tonight. It was impressive. I can't believe all the
calls. What's the total views in the channel?
113.
Are you kidding?
No. 17 current. 113 total, as in all.
113 total.
You have a long way to go to be number one in the world.
Another way to look at it is we lost 90% of our listeners.
Yeah.
This is the first cam show, everybody. Yeah, this is the first live school sucks. Because before it was Liberty Sucks, right? Or School Conspiracy or whatever.
It was just the School Sucks / Liberty Conspiracy podcast.
With Gardner Goldsmith. That totally doesn't sound anything like Gard.
That's not how he talks at all.
No, it's not. Gard's quite the character.
He's great.
He's awesome. He's a character. Somebody call in. Come on. You can talk about anything. It's just get all perverted, lowbrow.
Yeah. Oh, maybe they're waiting for the number. Oh, wait. The numbers are on the screen. 843-JOIN-SSP, or you can Skype in at School Sucks Live. We'll wait, maybe. Whoa!
Hey! Boop! Boop.
That's loud.
Hey, you're on School Sucks, not live.
Turn your internet down.
Hello?
Yes, you're going to have to turn something down.
Put headphones on for audio. That car just drove by. It sounded like. You there?
Are you eating Doritos?
I'm not, because I have orthorexia.
I have orthorexia.
I brought a full circle.
Eight.
He hung up.
That was a good plan.
I don't blame him. Honestly, I should have hung up like 2.5 hours ago.
Caller, if you can figure out what your problem was as far as audio, because we could hear like a lot of feedback coming in. Sounds like you had your computer speakers going, and he sounded like he was listening to us live.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a call. Sorry about these Skype noises. We'll fix that next week.
Sure, we will.
You're on the not on the air. You're on
you're
on Ustream.
You're on the streams.
Who is this?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. Who are we talking to?
This is Patrick from Texas.
Hey, Patrick from Texas.
How you doing?
It's good. It's good. It's a great show. You know, two technical difficulties, but I see y'all have been working out the kinks throughout the show, and I'm really digging it.
Oh, we've been working out our kinks.
We're
I don't know if y'all want to get back on topic, but no. I was kind of thinking about the motivation and the schools, and y'all were talking about doping up the kids. And frankly, I was one of those kids. And from my own personal experience, there's kind of a differentiation between self-motivation, outside motivation, and then motivation from drugs. You know, I was given these drugs saying I needed them and that they would get me on track. And then I take them and expect everything to be better, and it never is because it's kind of the same old crutch mentality. What do y'all think about that?
Have any of you guys ever had experiences with having to take drugs? Or
I avoid drugs. I even avoid like Tylenol at all costs. Like I don't know. I don't really like putting things in my system.
But we're all, you know, we're Patrick. How old are you? If you don't mind me asking.
I'm 25 right now.
Okay, so like we're all.
I'm 32.
Yeah, I'm 30. Osborne and I are 34. So we're, you know, half a generation ahead of you, and I'm guessing that this problem has gotten a little bit worse in that amount of time.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, so I mean, I didn't know when I was in high school. I graduated in 1995, and I didn't know too many people who were on drugs.
I knew plenty.
Yeah. And that would be the difference of a couple of years. I mean, but maybe people just didn't talk about it then, because now it's just like it's so normal,
right?
That maybe it was just something people were more ashamed of then. So you were put on some kind of medication for these reasons, saying that you were.
It was the typical, you know, overactive child, like, you know, no joke, since I was six, and then I. Of my own volition and my parents finally listening to me, I stopped having to take him around, I want to say the age of 14. But, you know, that's...
From the age of six, you said.
Wow, I'm so sorry. Yeah. Ugh, that's terrible.
Yeah, it was and one of the worst parts is, you know, the typical, you know, parents wanting to do the best for their children and the doctors wanted to continue to get the patient, so they're always trying to do something new. And, you know, if something was going to help, I don't think anything was ever taken long enough for it to help. And anyway, I guess to remain on topic, at least in my perspective, I was always told, okay, take this and everything will be better. And it kind of takes away the personal responsibility from it.
Did Patrick, when you were taking these drugs, did you feel... like less in control of yourself in certain regards, like certain ways?
Because for
I was just going to say, because for me, it was always, like for me, like my main reason that I personally have no interest in drugs is because I like who I am. I like to be in control of myself at all times. And I like the way my reality is already, so.
Right. Yeah, and to be honest, I mean, at the age I started taking them, I had no real... idea of a difference between my personal reality and my chosen reality versus, you know, the reality that is there, you know?
Yeah, 6 years old is very young.
Yeah.
You know, so, you're perceiving things differently.
Exactly. And so I guess that's mainly why whenever I got old enough to notice the difference, I stopped, because I did, kind of like you, prefer my choice, sort of thing. But to more specifically answer your question, it really depended on which one it was. And really, Adderall and Cymbalta were the worst as far as, like, making it almost like I don't know, like some other, you know, street drug where you think of, oh, the person is under that influence, so they can't be experiencing reality as we normally agree it to be. Some of the other ones were, I don't know, not as, I guess, weird, you'd say. But it's not an enjoyable thing, I guess I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I guess not to keep going back to this, but the main reason I wanted to call in is I just thought from the perspective of motivation and personal, actualization.
Oh, okay.
That if you're really going to make a difference within yourself or within, you know, say a troubled child, you know, which is going to be better, you know, giving them this crutch or this medication and saying, don't worry, this will take care of it for you, or really working with yourself or some other individual and saying, well, what's the problem here? Kind of like Nikki was saying, you know, not looking for something to blame or something to patch it, but what's the real problem and how can we fix it?
Right,
you know what I'm saying?
You want to address the root of the problem rather than medicate
potentially, yeah.
The symptoms, I guess, is what you're saying?
But we understand why that question is never really addressed in school psychology, because I think it doesn't mean that it's all the time, right? Because kids can come from abusive homes and kids can have legitimate mental or behavioral problems and legitimate learning disabilities. But we don't want to, like, talk about things where adults are going to have to change their behavior or established practices are going to have to be revisited. That's not how it works. The only thing that's ever asked or demanded to change is the kids, right? Nothing else is even a problem. So, unfortunately, all the people who are considered to be the experts – They don't want to explore these roots. And I really think that what you're getting at is, that's pretty much what I've been trying to say all along, that, the roots are not being explored because people don't want to look at them, you know? And I think that was also relates to what we were talking about with Mickey as far as the emotional response is concerned. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that was a good thread of conversation. I really enjoyed that part.
Yeah.
'Cause that really kind of gets at it, you know. Even my own self trying to shed some light on it, you know, it gets kind of hairy because I don't know what I want to admit and what I want to try and, you know, change my perspective of. So maybe it's better, maybe it's not, but at least I'll do something about it. But yeah, it's I guess probably the biggest barrier as far as, like, seeing some realistic change is the emotions people attach to certain ideas and how much that idea plays into a whole network of ideas, which is a reality and an identity. And as soon as you start shaking that, you know, people lose their rock. And you know, we already talk about how people can be unstable and giving them some other sense of instability just makes life that much more difficult to deal with. And we already live in, not to go on a tangent, but in a society where if you can't deal with it, find something to distract you from it
or medicate
plays into the problem,
whether that be like medication or some type of entertainment.
Yeah, exactly. If it's an amusement, if it's a narcotic or medication, like the stability always, the condition response to instability is to find some sort of distraction like that. And almost in trying to escape from the cycle, we feed into it in a weird way.
Yeah, and it's sad because in a lot of the situations, maybe something like talk therapy or some introspection, you could really learn a lot why you do things you do or you relate back to your childhood in certain ways that you can just look back on things and just help yourself heal from them rather than, you know, just relying, you know, going somewhere and getting medication to help with things. You know, you'd be able to cure yourself of past traumas or, you know, whatever specifically you're talking about.
And we look at how everything else is managed. It's kind of obvious or it's kind of predictable that this would be the outcome, right?
Right.
That problems, can just be that we can deal with symptoms, right? That dealing with symptoms solves problems, and I think that's so prevalent in our education system, in our political system, and it just goes back to what I've said a couple of times now: nobody wanting to really look at the roots with themselves, with you know, their family, the larger society. It's
it's scary as hell.
It's absolutely
it is scary
and I kind of, you know, from some of my own personal experiences and my own personal problems, I kind of have to be empathetic to people when it comes to you know, the political and the religious, because I mean, there's been a lot of things that I dealt with by kind of not dealing with, you know, initially. Yeah. So, and I think a lot of people have something like that. But I think to think about that kind of, I did a series, maybe like a year and a half ago called Escape from Imagination Land, where I looked at some of the conversations that I was having with people and I said, you know, why am I doing this? And should I be able, considering some of my own missteps in life, should I be able to better identify with, you know, they're running to these fantasies or running away from these realities? So,
yeah, we're all thinking on that.
Anything else? Because I'm ready to go to bed.
Well, I guess I'll just wrap it up and say that, well, not to wrap up y'all's show, but wrap up my part and just say that I've really enjoyed the show, and this has been a great first live cast, and thanks for letting me call in and voice my part and answering my questions. You brought up some good stuff to think about.
Yeah. Thank you very much again. And caller, what was your name? Sorry, I'm just looking at it. Patrick, that's
Patrick,
right. That's
from Texas.
Right. Yeah, all I can see is the number. Thank you so much, Patrick, for calling in, and please feel free to give us a call any Thursday, 10 p.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern.
You know what I order from Texas?
What?
Barbecue.
Grass-fed meat.
Oh, yeah.
Slankers meat. Barbecue. There's this company called Slankers. They ship grass-fed meats. Hmm. Just random plug there.
Cool. That was the end of Patrick.
You like them better than U.S. Wellness?
They have different prices and better rates sometimes. I order from both.
Gotcha.
Food talk. I love talking about food.
Talk about it. Go ahead, guys.
I love food.
Food talk live.
Food talk live. Brett's standing up. I enjoy cooking a lot. That's like my hobby and my living. So, I mean, I go to the grocery store every day. That's my idea of a date and not date.
A date and a not date.
A date and a not date. Hey, you want to go to the grocery store? I'll cook for you. Hey, is that a call?
No.
No.
Request.
I'm sorry about all these Skype notifications. I don't know why they're all coming on.
It's because you don't know how to use a computer.
I think it probably had something to do when we had to switch profiles.
No, I shut every Skype thing off. I don't know why that. You know, maybe it had something to do with the fact that we're not on we're not broadcasting anymore.
Mm.
We're just streaming.
Maybe.
Maybe not.
Maybe.
I don't know.
There's a call.
Last call of the night.
In the last call.
Adrian, you're on School Sucks Live. How you doing?
Hi. I was going to ask you guys, have you guys spoke about the recent school walkouts in Detroit?
You know, I wanted to do a whole show about that. We're not going to do it right now, but tell me a little bit about what you know. I saw a video that somebody posted on YouTube. And I was definitely interested in learning a little bit more. I did do a show with this young man named Shane, who went to high school in Maryland, and they tried to organize something similar, and they were connected to the whole Occupy DC movement, and the police became involved, and like they were threatened with dogs and all this stuff.
Jeez.
And you know, he described himself as like a democratic socialist, and he agreed with the, you know, the whole thrust of the Occupy thing, and we didn't really get into that. He seemed to have a very good understanding about the problems of education, but he didn't seem to have this idea that I think a lot of people seem to have in this whole Detroit walkout thing, that there's some kind of a fix for it, or that these people, that education for them is even really the goal. What are your thoughts, Adrian?
Right. Well, actually, I've been doing research for about the past week, mm-hmm. and I found some interesting notes about the whole, like, because I wanted to find out what happened before. So what I found out was, since I live in New York, in the Bronx recently, there was actually another, they were trying to stage another walkout. And on the May Day parade, Paul Robeson High School actually was trying to host another walkout for them too. All happening within the same time frame, right? So I kind of cross-referenced and researched back, and I found out that around November 18, 2011, there was a 10-point plan in the Bronx for demanding for a reform for New York public education. And at the same time in Detroit, around April 29th, pregnant high schoolers were arrested for protest and closure of their high school. So they kind of staged like a occupy the room, and then they got arrested for it. So it's pretty interesting to see how, you know, there was actually things that happened before that could have affected how the kids started walking out now.
Oh, so you're saying that some of these recent protests are in response to these things that you saw happening where you live or near where you live?
Yeah, but, and then also from the year before that, and then, you know, then now all this stuff is happening.
Right. Well, I mean, my biggest concern when I see young people doing this stuff, and is that they think that there's somebody that they can run to in a political way where there would be a solution.
Right.
Or the actual goal was like to really provide them a meaningful and enriching educational experience, and it's just failing because people are greedy or something. You know,
yeah.
I think I hope that they'll look a little bit deeper at, you know, the psychological destructiveness of school, and maybe through a little bit more research come to the conclusion that, you know, maybe that place is just about managing people. Maybe that place is just about controlling people and indoctrinating a certain safe and predictable belief system. Go ahead.
I'll say, are you still in school right now?
Yeah, I am, actually. I just turned 18.
Yeah. I just think back to my days in school. I mean, I graduated in 98. From high school, but it's just amazing how much I was able to learn on my own when I got out. Like it's just like, wow, I can actually learn things I want to, and it feels so great.
I mean, when they're not keeping you cooped up in a cage for 8 hours a day.
Exactly, right? I mean, it's pretty much what it was. And but I mean, for you, like growing up, have you been able to, have you used the internet a lot just to still just study things that you want to do? And
yeah, actually a lot. Like, if it wasn't for the internet, I wouldn't have found out about, you know, Gnostic Media or Tragedy and Hope. I think it's been, like, developing between you know, like, from the age of 14 till now. There's been such a difference by, you know, introducing the Trivium and a whole bunch of other educational outlets that I can actually use as tools to actually learn. There's been a big difference.
And I'm glad that you're finding that stuff. I mean, Tragedy and Hope and Gnostic Media are great resources for... you know, not just quality media, but those are educational sites that offer a lot in the way of how do you become an autodidact? How can you be a self-teacher? And I think a lot of people who listen to us on LRN might be unfamiliar with what those guys do. I've talked about them, and I've had them on my show a couple of times. I mean, I've done shows with Jan a long time ago, and I've done shows with Richard Grove and Tony Myers recently. But those are great resources, and I think that I would have benefited tremendously from having discovered something like that when I was, my goodness, 18. I don't remember caring about a thing before I was 25, you know?
No, yeah, it's been a build-up, though, you know, just from the past 2 years actually learning everything. But I wanted to go back and say, you know, you're right about the whole freedom, about the Detroit Freedom School, how they just changed their stance. I was actually talking to a lot of the people and trying to get the word out that, you know, the important part was them actually starting their own school and teaching themselves. Other than that, they're trying to go back to the public school, and it's like, no, they need to get out. And
right,
that,
yeah.
that was the important part of the whole thing. But, oh, God, you know, a lot of them are just, you know, they don't know yet. But I guess, like, the more, you know, the more people know, the more word gets out, and it's just like, you know, just conversing and like you guys were saying before, you know, not going on the conspiracy stance and just really saying, like, you know, this is a real problem and you can actually see it and you can see the symptoms.
Sure. And there's no problem with understanding that people did conspire to, you know, make a system that would accomplish, you know, a systematic dumbing down and systematic managing of people going all the way back to Prussia and then again in America, and using it to inculcate a kind of industrial or military obedience in people. I mean, there's nothing wrong with understanding that, and I think that that's useful information. There's nothing wrong with understanding that, you know, there's people within that system, especially you know, the upper echelons of the teachers' unions in your state, in New Jersey, who are conspiring today to get more of what they want and more of what they think they need at the expense of other people, and really at the expense of kids. So there are a multitude of real conspiracies happening within the government schooling system. But I think you're right, Adrian, that to understand, to see the larger systemic problem in real life, and people can feel it and they can understand it. And I think that that's what's happening in Detroit. I think that's what was happening with these kids in Maryland. They understand what education is. It's just a matter of, will they figure out, what to do about it and who not to run to for help. So
yeah, and we know how that goes.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. I mean, there's people who love it when others run to them for help. You know, I mean, that's kind of one of the reasons why we see so much growth and power and in the state. But we're going to wrap up for tonight. I'm really glad you're listening, and I'm really glad you're making use of those other resources. And feel free to give us a call. Any Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern.
Well, thank you. It was great. And, everybody have a good night.
Take it easy, dude.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, you know, I got to admit, I wish the internet was what it is now, when I was a kid, because I was using it then. I was on the internet back in 93, 94, I guess.
Yeah.
But it just, obviously, it's a completely different internet now. And it just, I was always looking for information, and I love learning different things then, but man, just if I was still stuck in high school right now, I could be making a living online and still being forced to go to this crappy place, or just drop out. I probably would just drop out at that point. You know,
I can't wait till the guys like Adrian, who were able to grow up with these resources, are the ones running the world.
It will be interesting.
Yeah, it'll be different.
I just hope it might even take a whole generation beyond that,
right?
Because Adrian is still really outnumbered, you know, as far as people who get it.
But the nice thing about being someone who knows what's up is you can exceed the accomplishments of other people.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Absolutely. That's a really good point. Yeah. I mean, you are so much more empowered to make a kind of meaningful change, where other people are just sort of marching through this. Well, let's go through high school so we can go to college so we can sit in a cubicle. And
they still do that. I have younger cousins who are in high school and who I've talked to, you know, and I would talk to anybody. I'll talk to them and they'll be like, and I'll mention something about, oh yeah, you know, so I saw this on Wikipedia, and they're like, oh, you can't, Wikipedia, that's just, people just write whatever they want on there. So even some kids, even teenagers now, it's like they still get brainwashed.
Yeah, where's the authority?
Right.
Where's the authority? Wikipedia has no authority. It's decentralized. So they learn in school that that's not a legitimate source. No matter how well it's sourced, you can go to the bottom of any Wikipedia page and see 150 sources. That link to scholarly journals. You might not be able to read the scholarly journals because it's very hard to get access to that stuff for free. It's all protected by like EBSCOhost and
if there's a claim made and there's no citation, it'll say citation needed.
And you can instantaneously get an infinite number of views on any particular subject or perspectives, right? Like my little kids, they're 5 and 2 years old.
Your kids are awesome.
When they want to know about something, it's like, well, let's go ask the computer.
Yep.
And we'll sit and we'll go through, 100 different links from all different points of view about any topic they're interested in.
Sure.
And just to think of where they will be when they are my age, it blows my mind.
I absolutely agree. I think that's a really good point. And, just back to Wikipedia for a minute. I mean, Wikipedia is a great tool to teach yourself information literacy.
Yeah.
Like, if you just want to have your brain be a sponge and have, people, like, if you want to go to some university and have somebody like Elizabeth Warren as a teacher who just views you like this, this empty bucket that she can dump propaganda into, then Wikipedia isn't useful for you. But if you want to be information literate and you want to be able to look at, a body of knowledge about something and then judge its validity or judge where there are things that need improvement, Wikipedia, it's like set up to be that kind of a teaching tool for the very reason you said, like, what are the sources like?
No.
You know? And then when you see that articles are missing sources, They sound kind of dumb, you know? Like, yeah. They don't sound like the really well-researched bigger topics. I mean, I think more of the research and more people want to get into these bigger...
Well, if you're looking to teach yourself things, I mean, you're not just going to... You're going to question what you read even on the internet. I mean, obviously you're going to question that. It's a natural part of learning, in my opinion. If I see something, like, I like to cook. I love looking up recipes, and I never look at a recipe and think, this is perfect, exactly how I want to make it. I'll maybe look at two or three different ones, and maybe take some ideas, and then I'll make it my own. You know, I'll do things that it makes it completely different, or, you know, just little tweaks. But I never just like, okay, this is how you do it. You know, this is the first thing I saw, so therefore this is how you do this, so, you know, such and such. Same thing with information regarding anything, I guess. When you're looking at Wikipedia, I don't just go off one source. You know, I'm going to look around at other links and check out other things.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So why would you just look at the textbook that was written how many years ago?
That was written from another textbook, right? By people said, all right, we'll get three textbooks, and then you go through this part, and you go through this part, and we'll write a new textbook. But textbooks are written from other textbooks.
That's so crazy.
That's true. Oh, man.
You have a long drive home. You have like
got a long drive hours. Home. Got a lot. No, it's like 20 minutes. Wait, no. You have a long drive home.
I'm not driving back to Keene. I live in Keene.
You have a short walk down two flights of stairs,
and I'm falling asleep in an alleyway.
An alley.
Yeah, there's this hobo I sleep with. We share a cardboard box. He's got this nice barrel. You can put stuff in and light it on fire.
What do you do with the, that's what barrels.
Yeah, we found a couch this afternoon. We took it apart. I think it should be dry now after the rain.
Are there cushions for the couch?
Yes. That's the tenders, the stuffing.
You guys could make some like badass American Gladiators costumes out of couch.
Is this
cushions.
What you think about the American Gladiators?
What do you mean? Yeah, you know what? I'm going to stop this recording.